Hello, Acceleration Nation, and welcome to another Sick Career Podcast. On today's podcast, I have a seasoned sales leader, Kat Scudder. I met her, like I meet most people nowadays, on LinkedIn. And she just volunteered at some point after she came to one of my workshops to give me feedback. And her feedback was so spot on about how I can do a better job with sales. One of the key pieces of feedback she talked about was that I should be less self-deprecating. And we talk about that a little bit on this podcast. We also will talk about the challenges and opportunities of being a single mother while also balancing your career. And also, Kat is a very good leader and absorber of information, and she offers some great advice and tips for books and people to follow to really leverage and grow your career and also your sales skills. So enjoy this episode. And after this episode, a couple of pieces of requests of you. One, if you like the episode, if you like the Sick Career Podcast, please rate and review it. And if you take a picture of your review and you email it to me or you direct message me on LinkedIn, we will get you some special offering of a free LinkedIn review. And finally, if there are ways that we can help you accelerate your career, if you're looking to get a better job quickly, confidently, and with lots more money, go to KademaCareers.com, check out our solutions, and we offer personalized coaching. If you're someone who likes the personalized coaching approach, we offer group coaching and we offer a do-it-yourself digital course, all developed to help you get a better job quickly, confidently, and with lots more money. Before I hand this off, I'm going to leave you with my favorite three words: own your career. Welcome again to another Sick Career Podcast, and today I'm really excited to have a new friend of mine who I met just a few months ago, Kat Scudder. Kat Scudder, I'm going to introduce you a little bit about how she does a really good job of introducing herself on LinkedIn. Kat is a results-driven sales executive with a people-centric approach, driving digital transformation and exceeding revenue goals. She is an esteemed sales leader. She's worked at amazing companies like NBC Universal, Walt Disney. Now she's at Nexstar. And now she's here on the Sick Career Podcast. She's also a single mom. Kat, tell the Sick Career audience a little bit more about you.
Hi, Sick Career audience. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you, Alan. I love being a salesperson. I did not intend to be a salesperson. That was not even close to the career I wished to have in my life. And when I kind of stumbled into it, I was pretty intentional about what I wanted to do. And I was like, well, I'm missing this piece called sales. Better get some. Couldn't believe that they let me do it. And when I got there, I was like a fish in water. I loved it more than anything. So I'm currently leading a team of 6 sellers and 3 assistants. I have just hired that whole team over at Nexstar Broadcasting. I'm thrilled to have joined them. They are the largest broadcasting group in the country with over 200 stations, cable channel, which is News Nation, a digital and also broadcast section called The Hill, and Best Reviews is part of us. Nexstar is an up-and-coming, it's a very interesting company. It's an up-and-coming company at the same time that it's a very well-established company.
Nice. And you talk about your unexpected passion for sales. Why did you think that it wouldn't be a area of interest for you? And what have you found that has been so appealing and enjoyable for it for you to develop a couple of decade career of continued success and increasing responsibility?
I think there is always this negative perception of a salesperson, right? Oh gosh, that salesperson is going to just drive me crazy. You walk into a store and your goal is not to talk to a salesperson most times, right? Your goal is to run away from them as quickly as possible because of all of the negatives that are associated with it. What I love about sales is I love the people part of it, of course. I think that's difficult if you're not a people person. You can be an extrovert or an introvert, but you need to want to enjoy having conversations in order to really be effective at sales. But I also really love the uncovering the business problem that is behind, like why you need a sale, you know, trying to really help people. I think that is sort of the center of my being, is that I like to find out a way to solve those problems and make people's lives easier. And so the perception of sales is, oh, they're trying to get something from you. And I really believe that it's give something, give a solution, solve something, help a business grow. That can be your sales motif if you approach it that way.
From my limited knowledge of you, like knowing you over the last few months, I know you only to be a giver. So one of the first interactions that we had was you came to one of my presentations where I was selling some things about Kadima Careers, about how we help accelerate careers. And you offered to give me some feedback on how I could be a better seller. And I really appreciated that. Not everyone necessarily appreciates feedback. I was just speaking to a former boss of mine who taught me the adage, feedback is a gift. And yes. I do believe in that. And without going into too much detail of how you ripped apart my sales presentation, what are some tips and advice that you give, you can share what you gave me or would you share other sellers in general about how to be a successful sales individual contributor, executive, or so forth?
I think it varies on so many different levels. So I'll try to do the general of it all. But I think more than anything, you have to be interested in what that person is trying to do. And that's the most successful thing. You can't fake, I mean, you can try to fake that, but you can't really fake it. If you're interested in someone's growth and success, then I believe that you will be great in sales because people will trust you. They will want to partner with you. If you are trying to pull one over on anyone, you just won't. So first and foremost, I think you need to really be interested in helping others and solving those problems. But then I also think you need to hone your craft. I am constantly looking for ways to get better at what I do. And I think this is true not just for sales. I think this is true for every profession. We're not in an age where anybody can set it and forget it with what they're hoping to do in their lives because every industry is being disrupted. So if you're not constantly in a learner mode, I think you have a more difficult time succeeding. So even as we were working, I pulled on my experience, but I was like, well, let me see what somebody else is out there doing. So even, you know, I did research to make sure that I was giving you advice that wasn't just from what my past was, but from what the present is and where I thought the future would be.
You take a deep interest in being interested in the person or the organization. And I see in your career, you spent 20 years about in the media industry at NBC Universal, at Disney, now at Nexstar. And media has evolved tremendously. Google and Facebook are here. Google had just started, Facebook a little bit after, and they've really disintermediated and totally disrupted the marketing environment. How have you managed to understand the interests and needs of the variety of stakeholders and clients that you worked with this dramatically changing landscape over the last two decades?
It's a complicated question, right? It's how do you evolve as an industry is evolving? And I think the answer is always goes back to that knowledge, right? To making sure that you spend as much time as you possibly can learning what's coming down the pike so you're aware of it. For me in particular, right, if I started, and I started in news, I wasn't in sales at all, but they looked like they were having so much more fun. And that was where the career path, if I wanted to move past where I was, I needed to look at something else. And so when I started, there wasn't streaming or, you know, digital options there, you know, TiVo was the big innovation in that day and age pretty much. And so what does that do? I think it's all cumulative. What are the steps that change a business, right? Like you're not going to understand everything for yourself or for your clients, but what are the things that you can do in progression to help you with those seemingly large transitions? So you take them a bite at a time, right? Like everything else. But I think it's really, it always goes back to listening and trying to learn and grow with your clients and grow with yourself. You know, I read an exorbitant amount of newsletters every day. With anything I read, I'm looking for the eyes of my business and my client's business. How will that impact their business? Because I might need to help someone and give them that intel. Like, hey, I saw this. Did you see this? What does that do to you? What do you need help with?
You're reading 30 to 50 newsletters a day. Are there some ones that are particularly good for the sales profession? I'm sure they're not all ad sales. There are probably a variety of different things. Are there some go-to newsletters that you recommend for people in a variety of different areas that are like your don't miss newsletters that you look at each day?
It has varied depending on where my career is at that particular moment. I for sure read the LA Times, the New York Times, the Washington Post, just need to know what's happening in the world, because that can be a big factor for especially advertising. You know, if there is a supply chain issue, there is no product, there is no advertising for said product. If you can't fulfill the demand you have, then you can't fulfill, you don't need to drive people to anything. You will only make them angry. So all of those are huge. But then in terms of, you know, I read Ad Exchanger, I read Digiday. Those are more technical side of the business. Mm-hmm. So those are both important to me right now. Ad Age is about ad agencies. So it sort of varies in what area you're in. Yeah. But I also read, some of those newsletters are weekly. There's selling ones that are specific. I follow sales gurus that I like, that they give me video tips or they give me selling tips. I'm a big fan of Jeb Blunt. I think he's an amazing sales leader and trainer. Kendra Scott is another one. Jill Conrath, there we go. But a lot of people in my industry like Grant Cardone. I've read one of his books. I like his videos better than his books, but I also think he's a very powerful message.
I've heard of Grant Cardone and I follow some of his stuff, and Ad Exchange. I was an avid reader of when I was at Google and Facebook and Ad Age while I was at American Express. I was an avid reader of that as well.
So see, you prove my point. It sort of shuffles in what you need to know depending on where you're sitting, is that some things rise to the top of the pile. I really better not miss this one because of this. Look, I've also read, when I have a lot of furniture clients, I've read the furniture news so that I know what's happening there.
Right. And this allows you to take that active interest with your clients and their clients' needs, so you're aware of what's happening in their world, and gives you more credibility, I would imagine, and become ultimately a more successful sales professional.
I would agree. Everybody wants to be heard. A salesperson, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson client relationship or if you are a parent child or worker boss, everyone wants to be heard. And the more that you let people know that you at least have spent a few moments trying to walk in their shoes, I think the better they will respond to you, period. Has nothing to do with sales, has to do with humanity.
So there are two topics that I did want to dive deep on with you in this call, and you brought up one of them with a parent-child relationship. So you're a single mother. How many children do you have?
I have two children.
Okay, which one do you love more?
You know, a good friend of mine used to say that she picked each day. She would tell her child, "On today I love you more, today I love you more." No, they're equal for me.
How old are your children?
They are both almost young adults. We're almost out of teenage years.
Talk about the challenges or opportunities of being a single parent. How has that impacted, enhanced, challenged you and your career trajectory over the last couple decades?
It has always been a big factor for me in my career. I love working, and you're right, I am happy. I love what I do. I love my job. I am thrilled to have an amazing team that I get to work with every day. So you're right, that's fantastic. I did, as a single mom in particular, sales can be very demanding. You need to go out with clients. You need to make sure that you're able to be at whatever event it is. I did not pursue any management track opportunities until my children were old enough for me to be able to do that. And meaning, like, I never wanted to miss the school play because I had to be on a plane somewhere. So I always wanted to make sure that I was in control of my schedule and that I was there for all the big moments, because it goes fast, right? I know you're a parent, so it goes fast. With that said, you know, one of the great things about sales is there's a little more flexibility sometimes. I have always had the privilege of having amazing managers in my life. So they have always understood my priorities. So when my kids were sick, I'm like, I have to work from home today. And that was before working from home was really a thing you could do. And I was like, I'll be working, but I'll be working from home because I have a sick child. And they were like, great, understand, totally get it. How can we support you? So I think people like that really paved the way for single moms. But it's a balance, right? And you know, my kids know, we'd be in the car and a client would call and I'd be like, shh, everybody has to be quiet. Nothing, say nothing. Because, you know, while my manager may have known where I was, my clients didn't necessarily need to know that I was with my kids at that moment. So my kids got really good at being quiet at the right moments. And I tried to always incorporate them into my work life so they knew what was happening and why I did it, and that it was for our family. So for me, work is both the means of taking care of my family, but also something that brings me joy. But they bring me joy, and they are the number one priority. So it's finding the balance. Yeah.
And you've made conscious choices. You mentioned that you chose not to step up to be a manager because you're like, hey, my priority are my kids. And your kids are still your priority now, but they're a little bit older. They can probably get home on their own. You've made a conscious choice that might have held back your career a little bit. Do you have regrets about that, or would you do that again? And how do you think that plays into when you look at the data? Women get paid 73 cents on the dollar versus men. If you had made the choice to maybe take the manager job 3 years sooner, 5 years sooner, you might have accelerated your career. My hunch is you don't have regrets about it, but how does that play into your career acceleration and your career growth?
It's a great question. And I think that I have no regrets. Never in a million years would I regret it. I made that choice for my kids. And I was fortunate enough that that choice didn't hinder me full time. And again, that is a matter of having really supportive management as I've gone through my career, who were able to not go, oh, she should have been a manager 5 years ago, 10 years ago. She must not be good at her job if she's not already a manager. They were able to look at me and understand those priorities. So I think that is very fortunate because I feel that there are many women who make the same choice I do, who don't get those opportunities. And for me, that really happened at the Disney Company. And so I am so grateful to what I was given there in terms of being able to learn and grow as an employee at that company. I do feel that while there is a much better understanding of what it takes to be a working parent, particularly a working mom, I still think we have a long way to go with that, especially in terms of compensation. I feel that working for a bigger company helped me more with that edge because there is a certain parity. They're a lot more concerned about having parity because they're worried about the longer implications. And since my career has only been at big companies, I feel that I have been a little bit more fortunate than a lot of my female brethren in the world in terms of that pay scale. Yeah. I love that there's a protest in one country where they like took the day off. They were like, oh, this is the day that we finally, get as much, we were equal to what men make or something. It was a great statement. I wish I could say it better than that.
Yeah, no, I think it's like in May or something. They finally get pay parity or something for like the rest of the year. I think it's like March or May. Essentially, you have to work for like 3 months or 5 months before you earn as much money as men do.
Yeah.
And there's lots of reasons for that. Lots of systemic biases in the process. Lots of decisions and prioritizations that are made. In the case with me and my wife, she made deliberate choices to slow down a little bit with some of her career while we had our three kids, like twins and then a daughter. So over like a 3 or 4 year period, and she kind of like didn't pause, but she made some decisions. Like you chose not to manage. She chose to do some other choices as a medical professional while she was nursing the kids and enjoying the kids while they were younger.
You can't have it all. You can have it all at different times. If you get in the right situation, because I have lots of friends who have made those choices and their careers have gone nowhere near the potential that they could have had. I think particularly for moms who stay home or parents who stay home.
Potential for their career might not be at the same level, but potential for parenting and developing that relationship, that lifelong relationship with their children, which doesn't necessarily get compensated in our society financially, but emotionally, and there's other benefits of building that strong bond with your children, I'm sure you would attest to.
100%. Absolutely. And it's great that there are choices. My mom's time, this kind of work wasn't even a choice.
That's true in other ways, but it sounds like you made a deliberate choice. You still agree that like my kids are my number one priority, and that's going to take priority over everything else. And no, that's noble, and I appreciate that. The other area that I wanted to cover a little bit in depth with you is you and I have had conversations about how seeking jobs, career journey is like a sales game in a lot of ways. And you're a very seasoned sales professional, but I'd love to hear the analogies and some of the similar strategies that you see between the career search, the job search, and you've moved around like to three super impressive companies, NBC Universal, Walt Disney, Nexstar. You've always moved up in your career. But like, how do you liken that to the sales process of like either internally or externally when you've made moves between those companies?
Alan, I feel like you talk about this, right? So I'm just going to emphasize, right? Your brand is so important in terms of how you represent yourself, both as a salesperson, right? But as a job seeker as well. I think it is really important that people understand who you are and what you stand for when you go into a job interview. It's exactly the same way in sales. I also think that, you know, networking is everything. In the sales world, we talk about relationships. Relationships are everything. Relationships are everything. And relationships are everything for a job seeker. I can tell you that in my career, I have gotten my jobs all through people I've known. Now, with that said, I may not have known them before I started really kind of getting my feet wet and looking and doing interviews or informational conversations or making sure I went to events, but I met them well enough that they felt comfortable giving me a recommendation to someone else who might have had a job. So I think from a sales standpoint, you are always wanting to make sure that you present who you are and make sure that you have something that people can trust. I think it's the same thing with the job interview. I mean, with a salesperson, do I want to spend time with this person? Like, I'll buy their product, but they're really annoying me. So I don't really want to buy their product because I don't want to have to sit in a room with them when they train my staff. Well, that same conversation can be this person sitting in a job interview. They have all of the qualifications that I want, but they're really annoying me. I don't want to sit with them in a conference room. And those are some of the questions that managers are asking themselves. How will this person gel? What will the next steps be? And I think that when you are interviewing and looking for a job, you don't always think about that question. You're so worried about, how will I do in the behavioral questions? How will I do? I have the technical expertise. What will I do here? That you sometimes forget that they're evaluating the feel of the room. When I went for one of my job interviews, they didn't ask me a single thing about sales, not one question. And they're like, well, you've been at your last job so long, we know you know how to sell. And I was like, this is the strangest interview I've ever been in. They said, no, we really just want to see, we've got a really good group here, and we want to see if you'll fit with this really good group. We don't want to blow what we have. And to me, that was really important kind of piece of how you present yourself in those interviews. And it's something that we don't necessarily think about as much.
Fit's important, but how do you balance fit? And you've hired people and you've been hired. How do you balance fit with the desire for diversity? Because sometimes people fit with people that are like them. And sometimes diverse people do not necessarily fit and align, but there's benefit of having that diversity in the room. There's a term, the tarmac test or the airport test. If you and I got stuck in an airport, I'm sure we could have plenty of beers together and have a good time.
Right.
So should I hire you because of that? Like, some people would say yes, some people would say no, but how do you balance the fit versus diversity?
I think it's really important to always be hiring with an eye towards diversity, and that diversity is in all ways, shapes, and forms. I have been very intentional about my hiring and go, this person will fit this area. I have not yet been successful at hiring a neurodiverse salesperson. I'm working on it. But other than that, like I try to make sure that we're representing the communities that we serve as salespeople. So when you talk about fit, fit doesn't mean looks like me. Fit doesn't mean thinks like me. Fit could be works like me. And when I mean like that means believes in a hard work ethic, believes in watching each other, believes in collaboration versus competition. So those are values. It doesn't matter your age, your color, your sexual orientation, your neurodiversity, your physical diversity, none of that matters. There's more, the fit then is a shared value set in what we wish to do here as a purpose.
No, I think that's really important to think about, like the values, because you can have very diverse backgrounds, very diverse experiences. You brought up collaborative versus competitive, and that those are like core different values. So like if you're very competitive, maybe you go to Goldman. If you're more collaborative, maybe you go to like American Express or something like that. Like I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the sales aspect of the job search. And I look at the job search. That's how we teach things at Kadima Careers. It's basically marketing and sales. Your resume and your LinkedIn profile and your narrative are essentially how you market yourself. And then once you get in the room with a decision maker, with the person who's going to be paying you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, like to basically lease you, or as talent as a service, as I like to say, you're selling yourself to a degree. Mm-hmm. And they're selling themselves on you a little bit, but they're the buyer. They're the ones that are spending money. So I'd love to hear like what the analogies are between how you sell advertising to some of the biggest advertisers in the world and how you've sold your talents to some of the biggest brands in the world. What's similar there? What's different there?
Well, I'll start with, I think anyone who is job searching, and I know you'll agree with this, has to be able to tell their story very well and succinctly. Mm-hmm. Anyone who comes to interview with me, the first thing I say to them is, I say this to everyone, I haven't looked at your resume. I want you to tell me your story yourself. That is the first thing I do. And it's astounding to me how difficult that is for some people, especially in sales. And my philosophy is always, if you have difficulty selling yourself, then you might have trouble selling my products because you want to be your best cheerleader. Now, I understand there's a whole bunch of reasons why someone may not feel comfortable, right? It can feel like they're bragging. If you're telling your accomplishments, they're your accomplishments. You're not bragging. It's your story. Be proud of your story. So first and foremost, I think it's really important for people to know the three or four crucial things that as an interviewer, what do you need to tell someone about yourself? That's your product, right? It's exactly the same thing as sales. What is my product? What is, when they walk out the door today, they need to know these three things about my product. They need to know these three things about me in an interview. If you don't know that going in, then they won't know that going out. And then you've missed your opportunity. You also want to make sure you are incredibly prepared. We never go to a sales meeting without being astoundingly prepared for that meeting. We've done our homework. This is your one shot. And there's so many people walking in the door asking for people's time. If you don't make the most of this time, then you've lost your opportunity. It doesn't come back afterwards. This is it. This is the one evaluation that they're doing. I can also say that in terms of job searching is a lot like, to me, the way that we search for prospects for clients, for business development. Again, very intentional, very targeted. I wish to work at this company. And I know you talk about, you know, sort of the, you know, if you want to work at a company, go for the big companies, right? Well, so if I want to go work at that big company, what am I going to do to get there? Because lots of people want to go work at that big company. Yeah. So how am I going to find someone who wants to talk to me? Because as we both agree, it's always going to be through your network. So if I don't know somebody, who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody? So ask every single person you know. Look at every LinkedIn. Make it a time. Like, you have to dedicate the time. It's work. You have to treat it like work. And, you know, try to have some fun, play great music in the background, whatever makes you happy to do it. But you need to find those contacts. But then when you find those contacts, what value are you adding to that conversation? Why are they interested in connecting with you? How are you helping them? How are you making it easy for them to help you? So these are things that are all the same sales principles that are also in the job search principles.
And I know when you gave me unsolicited but very valuable feedback on my sales pitch, it was actually very, some of the feedback you gave me, which was pretty harsh, is also some similar feedback I got through my interviewing process of not being so self-deprecating, because I'm naturally a self-deprecator. Yeah. And I think you gave me feedback on that in my presentation. I've also been given feedback on that when I interview for jobs. You don't want to come across braggadocious in my personality, but it doesn't necessarily serve you well.
And I will tell you that I didn't have this in my life either. There's until I went to a great speaker and she talked about it. And I want to say it's Lois Johnson, Dr. Lois Johnson. She talks about women in the workplace. And she was talking about women in particular are self-deprecating. We think we're bragging. And she has this great example. If you go around a table at a business event, men will traditionally say there, hi, you know, I'm Alan Stein, and this is, you know, I am the CEO, president, I don't know all your titles, of Kadima Careers. And I would say, hi, I'm Kat Scudder. And I may not even say my last name. And I won't say what I do because it's considered bragging. And she said, it's your title. You're not bragging. It's your title.
It's a fact. Yeah.
And it's just a fact. But I absolutely felt it was bragging. And I still feel a little bit like that in terms of my title and where I sit in the space. And I would say the same thing for everyone else who's looking for a job. Like, it is a fine line, right? You don't want to be a bragger in your job interviews. But at the same point, if you accomplish something and you don't say it then in your interview, when will they ever hear it? And if it's a fact, it's a fact. If you saved the company money because you put a time efficiency thing in place, then you did that. Don't make it up, because they'll probably check if they're really interested in you. But if you did this thing, if you increased sales by this much, if you were able to bring on this many new clients, those are facts.
That's true. And if you're not going to market yourself, if you're not going to sell yourself during this 45-minute conversation, which is the typical interview, could be 30 minutes, could be 60 minutes, but I usually find that most of them are 45 minutes. If you're not going to sell yourself, if you're not going to market yourself, it's going to be really hard often for that buyer to understand the value that they're getting from you.
That's it. This is where your moment, and you want to put them in yourself in their shoes, right? That's always good selling too. Why are you the perfect candidate? So what are their things? What are they looking to solve by hiring you? Someone said to me recently, a job is a problem solver. So I have a problem, so I need to put a person to solve my problem. So that problem could be my staff is completely overworked. They're going out of their mind. The problem could be we can't sell more of this because we don't have the right marketing person. So we create a job for the marketing person. But we're still solving a problem. So when you're in an interview, what problem are you going to solve for the company?
And that's so critical that I think so many interviewers or like candidates don't get. If you want this job because it's going to grow your career, it's going to pay you well, it's going to give you a big logo, that's all well and good. But what's in it for the hiring manager? Because that hiring manager has one spot, maybe two spots that they can select. So I'm just mansplaining here. But basically, Kat, what you said is exactly on point. I'm just reiterating that you nailed that.
You made me feel smart. It's all good.
Yeah.
I would say too, and how will you solve that problem better than anyone else who's coming in the door? Because you're not the only person.
And that's another key sales technique too, to know your competition. Unlike sales, you may, like when you were at Disney, you might have known that Fox is like a competitor of yours, and CBS or whoever was a competitor for you. Here, you don't necessarily know who your direct competitors are that are competing for the job, but you can kind of anticipate what some of those people might be bringing to the table.
Yes. And if you feel like you're missing some of those skills, get them as quickly as you can, right? Always be learning.
ABL. Always be learning. And I also say, always be looking. So we're running a little low on time. So I have three more questions for you before we wrap up this interview. One is, you mentioned lots of great people that have informed you, have taught you things, Grant Cardone, Joe Blunt, Dr. Lois Johnson, others. And on your LinkedIn profile, you say you're a partnership, enterprise, advertising, marketing, knowledge geek. Ask me for a book recommendation. So in any of those areas or anything else for the Sick Career Podcast audience, for people that are looking to accelerate their career, whether it be in sales or whether it be in careers in general, what is a book recommendation you will have for the audience? For me, maybe I'll add it to my Audible queue as well.
Any way you get a book is a great way to get a book. So for a general career kind of improvement, life improvement, if you haven't read Grit yet, you should. It's a classic.
Angela Duckworth.
Yep. Fantastic book. I also really like, this is newer, it's by the folks who wrote Multipliers, but it's called Impact Players. And I think it's a great way for people to really look at themselves and figure out where they fit. Am I a regular player, for lack of better words, or am I an impact player? And it's something like, they have sort of really good descriptions about whether you are a typical team player, and they have a different word for it, is someone who sees a problem. An impact player is the one who solves the problem, sees the problem, solves the problem. So if you wish to move forward in your career, you want to be an impact player. That should be your goal. So, and Multipliers.
Multipliers is great. I've read that one, but I'm going to add impact players to my list.
And then I'm going to bring my favorite one on video. because we talked, this might happen.
Yeah. Dan Pink.
Dan Pink. I love lots of Dan Pink books, but I love When. When is all about, and he says it in his subtitle, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. And this book talks about how we underestimate timing in our day-to-day activities. So he even talks about, like, you, if you have this kind of rhythms, you should solve these sorts of problems at these types of day, at this time of day, and these types of problems at this time of day. So it's all about maximizing your timing. It talks about what should you be first in a meeting. Like, for me, it's valuable because the client is called in, every single person on the planet, and we're all going in one after the other. What's the best time to go? This book has the answer.
I always talk about, like, increasing your surface area of luck, being in the right place at the right time. You can't necessarily control that, but if you can tip the scale in your favor and get those lucky breaks and then take advantage of those lucky breaks, I can't think about how many jobs I've landed just because being in the right place at the right time, being referred by the right person.
That's not luck, right? That's intentional.
Well, it's luck, but it's also taking advantage of when that luck presents itself to yourself. Yes. There's some luck there too. And there's some intentionality there as well. And then you have to make that impact, going back to the impact players.
Yep.
You have to take advantage of those. The last two questions I have for you is, what's one last piece of sick career advice you want to leave our audience with?
I would say not to get discouraged when you are searching, because it's super easy to get discouraged. And you want to try to remain as positive as possible, because people respond to positivity. So yes, whatever you need to do to help yourself stay positive, and I am not pretending that it is not an incredibly difficult thing to do, both mentally and physically. It is a hard thing to be searching for a job, either while you have a job, or worse yet, while you don't. There are so many mental issues in that. But practice self-care and try to stay positive if you can, because people want to be with positive people. So you want to make sure that you can do that in an interview. And if you can't, then I will say, fake it till you make it. Because that is another book, The As If Principle. Just try to, even if it's for that day, jump up and down, do whatever you need to do to walk in and present your best self that you possibly can be.
Positivity is definitely contagious. And people read that and it works to your favor. Last question I have for you, Kat. What's the best way to find you?
I would say the best way is LinkedIn. And I will apologize in advance. And if you've ever talked to me on the phone, you know this is something I say all the time as well, which is I am very interested in helping and giving information where I can. I believe that that's what we're meant to do, is help each other. However, when you do that, you're very, very, very busy. So if you don't hear from me, please understand that I'm not trying to be rude. It is just that my schedule has not permitted me to get back to you.
Awesome, Kat. Well, you've helped me grow my sales game, and I'm glad our paths have crossed.
Me too.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Sick Career Podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Kat.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the Accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You'll get honest insights. You'll get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba. And we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.